everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing in life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. We are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. If you want to learn about their awesome yearly conference, which will be in September, please go on over to pnwa.org. And speaking of conference, as I record this, I'm getting ready to head off to Dayton, Ohio for the Irma Bombeck Comedy Writing Conference, a humor writing conference. So if I saw you there, hey, I hope we had fun. Hope we did. So today's guest, Kristen Perrin. Interesting interview. Boy, she had an interesting experience, which we talk about, which is that her first book was published not in English, but in German and Dutch, and I forget one other language. And so this novel that she has out now is the first that she's written that has been published in English, where she's got to actually talk to people about it. She was actually born in Seattle, or in Washington, near me, where I live now, but she lives in Surrey, England now, where she got her master's and PhD in London, and she lives there now. And her... Addie and the World Breakers was her middle grade series. That's what she published that came out in other languages, but she's got her first adult novel out, a cozy mystery called How to Solve Your Own Murder, which just got, it's getting great love from Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show, of all things, I just learned about while I was talking to her. So it might be chosen for their book club. Isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. So we had a great conversation, did Kristen and I, and I'm glad I get to share it with you now. Enjoy. Okay, I am speaking today across the pond to expatriate Kristen Perrin. How are you doing, Kristen?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Bill. I'm really pleased to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Kristen is originally from my current haunts, the Washington State. I live in Seattle, so we don't get into it too much, but you got your education here in the Seattle area, is that correct, or what?
No, I went, well, that's part of the reason why I'm abroad is my education, but I was born and raised in Issaquah. I was born in Renton, raised in Issaquah. That's why you get a little bit of a Twin Peaks flavor in my books. definitely, I'm a big fan of that, but it's not the same vibe, but and then I left to pursue a master's degree after doing undergrad at a liberal arts college in Idaho, and then went to the UK to do a master's in international relations. My husband stayed, did a PhD, then had a career change.
You're a smarty pants. So you went over there, international relations. Okay, so, and you meet your guy, you get married. Yep. And he says, stay here. Don't leave, please. I can't go over there. They won't like my teeth.
I know. I think really it was probably more me because, and I think the flavor of my writing reflects this. As soon as I stepped off the plane, I think I was really just like, I don't think I'm going to want to go back.
Wow. Okay.
But like now that I'm older, I really miss Washington State, actually. I'm really finding, and I think a lot of the release of my book and the traction I'm getting in the US, writing from like a British point of view, has made me kind of homesick, which I was not expecting.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So, well, you don't know, keep changing. So, but you go to college for international relations. That's what you want to get your master's in.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right, you're academic, hard-driving A student, I suspect. But writers like to write, and usually they kind of always do. Of course, in the liberal arts, even in the sciences, I don't know where that falls into, somewhere between liberal arts and sciences. Writing is essential. Of course, you're always writing, but it's different.
Yeah.
So were you a creative writer even as a young lass? Were you always writing, scribbling poems and stories? What was your relationship to that?
Well, yeah, I really was. I think One of the things, and I've been talking about this with a lot of my fellow writer friends of my generation, I think I fell prey to something that, I mean, and I think it came at this generation with the best. I'm an elder millennial for those out listening who are wondering, like, how old is
Get
this
that,
lady?
people.
So I fell prey to this. Our teachers, our parents, I think it came from a really well-meaning place, but there was a lot of this. Creative pursuits will not get you a job. You cannot live off of creativity.
Hey,
And I think.
can I interrupt you for just a moment and say this is advice that has been handed down to people for thousands of years?
Many,
I
many
don't
years.
think it
Do you
started with
know,
yet, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm.
honestly, sometimes when I feel a bit like head up about this and about how much time I spent spinning my wheels, trying not to write and eventually succumbing to like the desire to write. I watched this TED talk with it's Sir Ken Robinson, and
Oh,
he
I know Sir Ken Robinson. He's a
do
lovely guy.
you
I
me
interviewed him twice. He's great. We really got
oh
along.
I y do you know that TED talk that he did years ago that is education killing creativity? It just really hit home. I didn't write for many years. I wrote as a young child. I loved poetry. I loved writing little rhyming couplets. I loved writing stories and things as a child. And then as soon as I got into school, where you're kind of meant to find what you're good at, and because I was able to like write a persuasive essay and do some research and have a healthy debate, it was sort of, well, this is what you should do because you can. And that propelled me all the way through a PhD. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't love that too. I definitely had passion for that. I don't think you can get all the way through, although I do know PhD students who don't have passion for what they're doing. But I think it would be very hard to get through the type of PhD that I did without feeling, very driven by the subject matter.
That is
Yeah.
interesting. So that's interesting. And I'll tell you that this is a conversation I've had with many artists, and the issue of money and those, there are some artists who just like, I can't do anything but this. And I don't know how to make money at it, but I'm screwed if I can't make money because I
Yeah.
can't be a barrister and I can't be a doctor. I
Yeah.
can only do this. But there's a lot of people
Yeah.
who can do a lot of things. And so this is a debate. And so if you don't mind me asking, what were your parents? What did they do with their time?
So my mom was an accountant for the Boeing Company, which is, Seattle area. My dad was in computers,
All right. So
similar
it's
with the Seattle kind of, and it was a very, and it was a very, the way that a lot of people's parents around me understood what a comfortable life meant was, this a very organized corporate thing. And it was safe. I think that's why. And our teachers told, our teachers, definitely fed this to us as well. It's this is a safe choice. You won't go hungry.
That's true.
But yeah, so but for me, finding academia was like a sort of middle ground because
It
you
is.
can be creative in academia.
And it's life of the mind, and you're having your own thoughts and you're exploring those thoughts. It's not totally removed from creative writing, at least because you are thinking for a living in a way, right? You're thinking about life and thinking about things.
Absolutely. And I remember as well in like when I was doing my PhD research and I was giving my first talk ever. They kind of get you in early to do some talks to kind of season you up because you're training to be a lecturer, you're training to be a professor. That's pretty much what you can do if you're in international relations. I was studying criminal tribunals for the former Yugoslavia. I was in
Cheery.
studies. Yeah, this is why I turned to creative writing. I remember my supervisor kind of going, you really come at this in a kind of bizarre but yet very innovatively creative way.
Already.
And so I was already kind of zigging and zagging around what normal people would do really methodically. And the other, coming back to why I started writing again, because that was during my PhD was when I started writing again, and I started writing like I
During your
was,
PhD,
yes,
when you're
I
doing all
start.
this writing anyway.
I know it was. I started writing like I was a starving person, and that was my food. Like it was just, and it was because a friend of mine who was also doing a PhD and was also doing a subject matter that was really dark. You know, she was studying radicalization of youths, and you know how that
Wow.
happens.
Yeah.
And she was just like, we would get to the end of our days and we would go, you know, this is London, we'd go and have a pint.
Yep.
I would just be like, the world is not okay. Like we're just like, you know, my data set was war crimes tribunal. So I spent hours a day reading these transcripts, which are really harrowing. And she dragged me to the Students' Union building and said, you have to join a club. She joined the Fashion Society and she was sewing things.
Okay.
She was like, you have to find something that is not this.
Yeah.
And you have to join. And I remember flipping through the pages of like, what are the clubs that exist? This is at University College London. So there's quite a lot. It's a very big university. And I was like, you know, I saw creative writing there and I was like, could I? Oh, I don't, I had this imposter syndrome already, but then I thought, no, I have to, I'm going to do that. And I joined the Creative Writing Society. I was like, with all these creative writing master students who were doing this extra, and I basically leached off of them for information on how, you know, they were, you know, all of this stuff they were learning on their master's programs, I would show up out of hours and just talk to them about and kind of sponge the information off on. So I learned so much from just going to those meetings.
Were you writing at the same time? Were you letting yourself write stuff or and now your first published works,
mm-hmm.
books were middle grade.
Yes.
But did you start writing that kind of stuff for you? Because usually we start writing about people our own age. That's the most natural thing. Or did you go write for children's stuff?
When I was doing my PhD, I started writing a murder mystery, but it was like very philosophical. I was trying to be extremely literary.
Okay.
Because I felt like, you know, I'm a PhD student. And I was hanging out. All of these creative writing students were just so bright and so articulate. And I just felt this literary scene the Writing Society at the time was headed up by Naomi Ishiguro, who writes. She's the daughter of Kazuo Ishiguro, and
so it was a pretty heady bunch.
Yeah, it was a very talented group. Naomi has a collection of short stories that is amazing, and she has another work of fiction out. She's a very talented writer, and I was just a bit out of my depth, but I was trying to be, you know, like them. And I got like 20,000 words into a book that will never see the light of day, as you do. And children's was what helped me find my feet, because years and years and years ago, when I was growing up, my main job, not when I was growing up, but like when I was in high school and then when I was in college, I would kind of continue to come back to this job. And I was a children's bookseller in Barnes & Noble Issaquah.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep, there was a time that I ran the children's section. I did the like midnight release parties for the Harry Potter book for a couple of years. Yeah. Oh,
so you got a little view of the world of publishing, just a little view from behind the scenes a little bit.
Yeah. I got to do story times. I got to just see what books kids wanted, and I got to see how parents bought books for their kids and what adults were asking for versus what children were wanting. And then I also just read a lot of children's literature just because that was the section I was in. There were times where kids were in school, but I was working. and the children's section was dead. And I just read a lot of children's literature, mostly middle grade, which is for 8 to 10-year-olds. And I just got enchanted by that age bracket. So when I actually thought about what fit for me to write, and I, because I came back to that, Barnes and Noble Issaquah let me show up in between like breaks and summers, and you know, they just kept letting me just come back and work
there.
So I was like a little ghost that would kind of haunt the Barnes and Noble and, you know, eventually disappear and float back when I had another break from a degree. I think it was just such a positive time. I really enjoyed my job there that fueled, you know, that was, I think I felt like this is achievable. Children's literature to me feels achievable.
Oh, that's interesting. And I do think it's so important that we have to make it achievable, because some people could argue, you could always create an argument for why something isn't. But by deciding that it is, it just psychologically something breaks down that allows you to do it, I think. So that, what a great little trick you played on yourself,
Yeah. I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but I think that sometimes I think a lot of writers can benefit towards just letting yourself gravitate towards a comfort zone. And
Oh,
we've all
be
got them.
comfortable.
Yeah.
Also, it allowed you to drop, because here's the thing, literary fiction is fine, but it's like anything else. You got to be on board with what it is. It's got to be what you want to do. It's got to be how you want to tell stories. You got to be into it. And
Yeah.
unfortunately, literary fiction exists in a place all by itself where,
Yeah.
it's kind of, can you do it? And it's the best. And it's all, which is all, none of which is true, but it just is right for some people and not others. And at least when you go to middle grade, you have to drop all that kind of stuff because you're writing for children and you're allowed not to be tragic. In fact,
Yeah.
really can't be. And
Yeah.
I always say, I
Well, I mean,
wish we would tell stories to ourselves, us adults, the way we will tell them to children sometimes.
yeah. I would argue, I would push back a little bit on the tragic comment because I would argue that some of the books that have broken my heart the most have been children's books.
Oh,
There are some
interesting.
children's books. There are some children's books out there that I was
Even
like,
for
wow,
that grade level?
definitely gonna cry now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All
Off
right.
the top of my head, children's books that I cried at the end of quite openly would be The House with Chicken Legs by Sophie Anderson. The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. Just, and it might just be that I'm a big softie. That's also part of it.
That's okay, but I stand corrected. There's more range, but
I
in
mean,
general, with literary fiction for adults, there is this sort of affinity for tragedy, I think. There's a kind of sense like that's what makes it good. And not all, but let's be honest, there's a lot of it. And so,
I think, what's it's really interesting that you kind of peg that tragic element with literary, because one of the things that took me a little while to land in my cozy crime comfort zone was this feeling that basically something that is comfortable isn't important. And something that is comfortable isn't providing what literature should provide for people. And I definitely disagree with myself in that. And it took me a while to kind of go, I there are times when, because the other thing is there is this very literary versus commercial divide, and I struggled for a while to kind of go, well, you know what? I am occupying a very commercial space now with my murder mysteries. And I had come from this academic, kind of, oh, if I,
That's
and
because literature and academia are starting to get kind of all twisted up together sometimes. There's a kind of overlap with that.
they really are. And it sort of circles back to this idea of if you can do it, you should do it. And I kind of think, well, could I write literary fiction if I wanted to try to do it? I could put my mind to it and I could probably produce something. I don't know what it would be or where it would go, but that doesn't mean that I should.
No.
And so yeah, so I think being in this commercial, I was talking to a I have a writing community, a group of fellow writers that I have, the crime writing community in particular has been really the children's literature community and the crime writing community are really wonderful, helpful spaces.
That doesn't surprise me.
They're non-competitive. Crime writers are like there's a I think because the readers both in kid lit and crime are voracious, and you're never going to be competing against your fellow writers because your readers will read something in a day and go, gosh, I want more of the same thing. Or I want more of that, but maybe like this. It just and they're fearless as well. They'll pick
That's
up, they'll look around, they'll grab stuff off the shelves. And so I think it, yeah. So I was talking to a writer, a friend of mine, and we were talking about commercial fiction, and she was describing it as it's not going to change your life, but I enjoyed it. And I thought, sometimes you like your life the way it is, and you want to reach for something that's not going to push on that.
Also, I have the more I've been living and writing and talking to writers and talking, the point to life is to find what you enjoy. There, nothing should be medicine. Either it uplifts you. There are certain stories I won't watch anymore. I won't watch stories about Nazis. I won't watch anymore. I mean, it's okay that the stories had to be told, but I don't want that story anymore, or slavery. I won't watch those anymore. It's not that they shouldn't be told, but it doesn't take me where I want to be taken sometimes. You know what it reminds me of is that for a while I read tragic love stories. It's sort of when I really, they moved me because I had had a somewhat tragic relationship to romance until I married this person at a relatively young age and have been with her ever since. And I couldn't have that relationship to love, to romantic love. I kept trying to write stories like that, but it wasn't an accurate representation of life as I live it. And it was a hard change for me to start writing about life the way I actually experienced it as to how I had read about it when I was a young man in the novels I had loved at that time. Does that make sense?
It does. It's really interesting as well, because I think that what you said in like the first half and then the latter half could be split into two parts, because it's about kind of our relationship to what we consume and our relationship to what we create. And so in terms of consuming difficult stories now, and this is possibly because I come from, you know, a genocide studies PhD, I do tend to gravitate towards cozy things or whimsical things or things that make me feel comfortable. But I do make a point to push myself, because I think that if I get too stuck in a cozy space, I may be doing myself a great disservice in terms of, I don't want to crystallize into a person who, you know, even if stories of I've interacted with some version of a story before, and I think I've heard it all.
Right.
I don't ever really want to close that door. I can understand a lot of people who will say, you know what? I have actually consumed a lot of that, and I feel like I need something else now. That's completely fair. And I say, like, this is just the way that my mind works, is that I do definitely have, I'm someone who gravitates towards stories that have, you know, a pulse of challenge and, you know, themes of social justice, or, you know, that's kind of, but, you know, I'll draw a line right there and go into what we create, because I think the way that we view the world, when you say, you know, the way that you, you know, looked at romance and love stories based on the life that you're living, I definitely think that we change as people and that our work should reflect that.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And you know, oftentimes with writing middle grade, I'm writing from a first person point of view of a 12-year-old, and it's not a 12-year-old who was a 12-year-old when I was a 12-year-old in like the 1990s.
Right.
This is one who, you know, it's a modern book, and I need to think about, you know, the way being 12 can be universally experienced no matter what, you know, time we're in. And I am, you know, I am a 42-year-old woman. And that is something that is a real stretch sometimes, and that it can be extremely challenging. It can be energizing when you tap into something, because you can tap into like an old version of you that, you know, can give you a lot to work with. But the you, you know, the you now, can write it in a way that is a lot more clear and interesting and emotionally relevant than, you know, a version of you, you know, all the way back, you know, or even, you know, if I was in my early 20s trying to write about a 12-year-old, I don't think that I would hit the emotional beats in the way that it should work for a middle grade novel. I don't think I was ready to be able to have the insights, having the insights that I do now, having children of my own. You know, and I don't think you need to have children to write children's literature.
No, you don't. I mean, Dr. Seuss famously said, entertain them, you raise them. You know, it's interesting. I have a theory about comfort zones, because I'm all for comfort. I never in my life want to be uncomfortable, like it ever. But it doesn't mean I want to be bored either. That's uncomfortable. But I feel like you shouldn't. I don't want to get out of my comfort zone, but I want to keep up with it, because I feel like it keeps moving, because I keep growing. And when I get restless, it's when I keep doing the same things. Or writing the same kind of things, and in fact, what I'm wanting is moving ahead, and I'm not staying with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think. I think that it goes back to this idea of like when I say I don't want to crystallize into one person, one version of myself, and have that be it. And I actually have noticed because, progressing into your 40s and beyond, for me, it's created this sort of sense a line where you're looking back a little bit more than you're looking ahead, and you're thinking about, how you are as a pro all these introspective things that come with just getting older. And I'm sure that I have a lot of that ahead of me. I hope I have a lot of that ahead of me. But I think that when it comes to writing and my relationship with writing and my relationship with comfort zones, my books, if I don't push my own comfort zones and my own just levels of curiosity out, my books are going to stagnate. What I create is going to stagnate. And then me as the person, I just will pr probably just be the person who just has the same anecdotes all the time and, doesn't really have a lot to offer. It's harder though as you get older because you go, well, this is working for me. I'm
That's
going to
right. Well,
hang on to it.
I figured out adulthood. You know, it's an interesting
Yeah.
thing, but I think for the first, 30, middle 30s and close, the journey is always out in a way, the job, the partner, the family, the house, it's out, it's exploring. But right about where you are now is when it starts to be go in. Because usually, maybe you're living in one, if you're not someone who's traveling the world all the time, you tend to have settled somewhere and maybe into some work and with the same person. But it doesn't mean the journey stops, it just goes in. And what better life than the writer? Because I always say to my students, I'm like, look, man, you sit down and there's nothing to react to, there's nothing to interact with but your imagination and that story. It's just you and your thoughts. And you have to find, there has to be all you need, has to be right there at the blank page, right?
And I think that's a thing about of people who naturally live in their imagination. There are a lot of people who want to be writers, and I think that some of us who have always lived in our heads quite a bit because we get bored at, and I was always one of these people who sits in a class and I would kind of go, right, I don't really want to listen to this. It was usually math. And I honestly would like the teacher reports that would come back all the way from elementary school would be like, gosh, she just sort of stares out the window a lot. Is she okay? And honestly, it was because I was just somewhere else. And I thought of that as being a bad thing for a really long time. Like, oh, my focus is so bad. And now I realize with my it's an essential part of my writing process where I just have to have quiet where my phone is in another room. I am just in my own head. And, I can be doing something else at the same time that is very basic and mundane. But, doing dishes or going on a walk is a good one. But I need to have a large amount of time in my own head. Or I will take it. Or I will take it when someone else, when I get overwhelmed or there's just too many things going on, I will find myself just clicking out and being like,
You
I'm
know, it's
sorry.
so interesting because I work with, I teach, and but mostly what I teach is sort of the emotional, psychological challenges of writing. I don't get into craft that much. And a lot of times I work it, for women, not all, but the women who come to me for help, the thing they often, I would say they're most likely to have the problem of, I don't feel comfortable closing the door and not taking care of being there for people and being, and the writers I know, men and women who really thrive, do not have a problem closing that door. They're like, look, man, I'm going to do it and I'm going to be alone and I'm not going to feel guilty about it. And that's something to teach them, to not feel guilty about wanting to be alone and pursue their own interests. Does that resonate?
Yeah, it really does because also it took me a number of years, and I think I realized this possibly during my PhD. I had my kids while I was doing my that's another
Oh
thing. I
my
was very busy after
God.
doing my PhD. I had my daughter partway through and then I had my son just after. But I realized that the time spent in my own head or doing something that was for my professional life or for myself, I was just a better person all around when I
That's
switched
right. That's
back
right.
into, I was a better, I'm a better mom, I'm a better, partner to my husband. I just,
Right.
it just, And I think that feels pretty universal. I've never met a person who said, oh yeah, no, I feel like I'm a worse person when I
Why,
actually have.
right?
But I really I find it really interesting that you teach the emotional and psychological side of re that's really fascinating to me, because one of the things that is a common question I've been asked, so I'm just for the people listening, I am a very new to this whole talking about my work process,
Right.
because while I wrote middle grade for a number of years, it was only sold in translation. So it meant it was only in
Wow,
the
weird.
German, Polish, and Dutch. Because we went on submission with these books. My agent, who's brilliant, took them out on submission to editors. And the pandemic, when it was the very beginning and we were locking down, happened like literally days later, a week later.
Wow. Yeah.
And then everything just really went sideways. But the countries that were still sort of functioning, because we were sort of just on the edge of, is it in Europe? It was like, is it just going to be in Italy? Like, is it just,
Right,
where is the
right,
pandemic going to be? It was that
right.
time. And so I sold in Germany, I sold in the Netherlands, and I sold in Poland. And
Wow.
so I've not ever, for all of that, I was making a kind of quiet, small living, just writing books that were then translated, and I hadn't didn't have to do any trips or events or
Right.
interviews or anything like that.
Weird.
There were times when I'd get tagged on Instagram because somebody would, some lovely reader would, write something all in Dutch and show a picture of my book, and I didn't know it was even out. I'm like, oh, look, it's my book, it's on the shelf. So this is a whole new thing to me. And so one of the questions that is coming up a lot is, what advice would you
That's
give to
right. That's right.
writers?
Yep.
And I've listened to a lot of writing podcasts. I've read a lot of writing advice blogs. I've read books on writing. And
Yeah.
a lot of the advice kind of s very circular. And the
Yeah.
one thing that for me always feels like the best advice is to figure out as much as you can how your relationship with your mind is, and
Good.
how your relationship with your general just sense of self and well-being and emotions and mental capacity, how all of that balances.
That's right.
Because I think that once you learn how you function, how you are the most productive, how you are the most creative, you can learn, when you're close to getting burnt out, why you're procrastinating, what you
Yep.
need to do to counteract that. And you can, yeah, and that helps the process more than, for me, that has been the one key thing, even more than things like, sit in the chair and write every day,
Oh,
or,
listen.
things.
I have spent the last 15 years essentially talking about why sitting in the chair isn't enough. Like that you can want to slit your wrists after sitting in the chair. Like it's not going to do it. This
No.
the
And I think
psychological aspect is everything to me.
I think sitting in that is that sit in the chair advice can do a lot of damage to people like myself. I realize that it works for a lot of people, and that's wonderful. But for me, it did a lot of damage, because it made me discount a lot of productivity that is not sitting in the
Oh,
chair.
for sure. The
You know?
muse is on 24/7. She'll be there. She doesn't care whether you say I'm writing or you're doing the dishes. She will talk to you when you're open to hearing.
It's honestly, there are times when walking around the library is work. I'm not saying work in a bad way. I'm saying work in a, this is a productive thing that I'm
That's
doing.
right.
Just looking at, the things people are talking to people, or going on, being out in the world for me, in small doses, when I'm feeling stuck, just other things as well, that really get your brain moving. I mean, reading is very important to me.
Yeah.
I do a lot of reading, and I know a lot of writers can't read while they're drafting or while they're
Yeah,
editing.
there's some who can't. Yeah.
And that I and again, like, everybody works differently, and but for me, and I tend to, I mean, I can understand how a lot of people can't read while they're trying to draft something. I tend to not read in my genre
Yeah, that makes
while I'm
sense.
drafting.
Yeah.
Partially not because I'm worried about, what somebody told me this phrase, what is it? It's like creative bleed, or Something about where people worry about like a book imprinting on your style and ability to write. I don't think that that's a, I don't want to say it's not a thing, but it reminds me of the university students who would come when I was a PhD student and I would teach. I was teaching, you teach for the professors, you do the grunt work, some of it, but it's wonderful. It's like you're getting your feet wet. Yeah, I really enjoyed teaching. And it reminds me of the students that come that were really worried because we had this software called Turnitin that would look for plagiarism. And we would run all these essays through the plagiarism checker. And there were students just wringing their hands, being like, I'm so worried that I might have, I was reading so much that
Accidentally,
I
right.
might have accidentally plagiarized. And I remember talking to my supervisor and saying, like, what do you say to them when they come and say this? And he said, the ones who come and they're worried about it are never going to be guilty of doing
That's right.
it. Because
That's right.
plagiarism is a very deliberate
It's a
act.
conscious thing.
It is a definitely. So this idea of like creatively, I understand how people can kind of be like, no, I want a pure mental space where for me, the reason why I don't read within my genre while I'm drafting is simply because it makes me there are so many incredible books out
Yeah,
there.
you start
It
comparing.
can really chip away
Don't
at
do
you.
it. You don't want
It's
to do
like, you're like, wow, I did not need imposter syndrome in the in you know at the start of my day.
it.
I work very hard to keep that in its own little box.
No, that's smart.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that, for me, I read, while I'm drafting, cozy crime, I read anything else, children's fantasy, sci-fi, historical. I actually say the thing I read the least of is literary fiction, but I do make an effort to pick up literary fiction that does appeal to me.
Floats your boat. Floats your
Yeah.
boat. Not. I have to. I just realized at this late moment in our interview what a bad host I am. I have not, to this moment, actually said aloud the title of your book,
Oh my goodness,
which is
this
a
is
great title, How to
great.
Solve Your Own Murder. So
Yeah.
this is in English,
Yes.
and has been out a week. Well, it'll be a 2 weeks by the time this goes up. How to Solve
Yeah.
Your Own Murder. So I will, in the intro, I will be talking about it. So, but
Yeah. I
anyway,
was gonna
there it
say,
is,
I
people. I
know,
am
right?
sorry. I got so interested in you, I
That's
just forgot to
okay.
even bring that up.
I was actually feeling quite relaxed because it was the first time I didn't have to elevator pitch at the start
Oh,
of
is it?
the
Yeah.
thing. I was like, oh, this is
We could just
refreshing.
talk. See, people say, gosh, she's interesting. Her book must be. And I knew you would be. You've got, I don't worry about you crystallizing. You've been moving and changing and doing. It's going to
I
keep happening.
definitely,
It's
I
going to keep
think,
happening.
yeah, I think more than anything, I think the easiest way not to do that for me, and this again comes from just me being, this is just how, this is the person I am, former bookseller and things, but I think just reading and reading it all, just reading widely. We've got this. So I've been absolutely over, like, just floored by the fact that my book has been chosen to be on the Tonight Show, Fallon, Jimmy Fallon's.
He did. I missed that. Really?
It's battling it out with these absolutely outstanding books.
Get out of
And
town. Well,
so
congratulations.
everybody's going and voting, your book is pitted against someone else's. And I just want to read everybody else's books. So every time my book's up against somebody else's. So I was like, oh, wow, okay. Well, I mean, I'll look at it as if I were a consumer of this book club, what would I want to read? I certainly don't want to read my book because I've read that amount.
Of course.
I'm just voting for everybody. I'm voting for the person who's against me because
You really don't understand how this works, do you, Kristen? Okay, well.
I'm not very good at promoting my own work. I have to say that, yeah, it's been the spotlight that's happened with that is just
Well, that's
can't
awesome.
believe it.
That's
I
awesome.
can't believe it. It's just really, really fun to see him do like hold up the books and see
Ah,
my
that's so
spine right
awesome. Hey,
there. Yeah.
congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank
All
you. And
right.
I didn't say that to promo. I was saying
It's
that
okay
like
to promo. Good
I
Christ. It's okay to promo because you
can't.
are, it is very unusual to have a late night talk show host promote a murder mystery. So
I know this will never happen to me again. This is
probably not
a lifetime thing. But can you tell I'm new at this? I just really like books, and I honestly like the one that my book is up against this week. I was like, I want to read this. I'm reading it.
That's fine. But in the meantime, you beat the drum for your book. It's okay. It's okay. See that people? Oh, sometimes the best. Yeah. Sometimes the people best at talking about this stuff are the ones who don't want to. So I commend you on that. But listen, you are a fascinating person. I'm very happy to hear about. I did not know about the Jimmy Fallon thing. That is awesome. But I'm not quite done with you.
Okay.
Not quite. I have one question. One last question I want you to do is I want you to think about all the writing you've done in your life, both for children and adults. And if it's taught you anything about being a person, it's taught you.
Oh my goodness. If it's taught me anything about being a person, I'm probably going to say a very common answer, but I think that it's something that writers who manage to break through into traditional publishing probably all share. And it's taught me a resilience and tenacity.
Yeah.
I think that the ability to just keep going and keep pushing, even when, you know, there are going to be people who, you know, go out of their way to dump on what you do. And you kind of just have to go, okay, that's, you know, that's part of the game. And you just, this resilience is something and it's helped in all kinds of aspects of my life. The writing resilience of, you know, the rocky road of getting traditionally published has helped me in so many other capacities, because you kind of, you know, there's I did a little interview with Writer's Digest, and I can't remember what question it was that I answered this to, but they pulled it out as their little kind of blurb quote that they have in the middle of their thing. And I used the phrase roll with the punches. And it's just, I think it is just that, like, you learn to figure out which problems are going to be big problems, which problems are going to be small problems. And you learn when you're fretting over small problems and you shouldn't be, simply because you're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And that resilience will always kick in if you, you know, believe that it's there and you work to find it. So
there is nothing wrong with that answer. Resilience. Okay. Ooh, yeah. It is common, but it's absolutely true. No, it's okay. I don't think people can't. I think that people, I like to tell my students that whether you've been published or not, you're learning something about life when you sit down to write. I just think it teaches us so much. Yeah. And so it's taught you too. I have to say clearly, you're a wise 42.
Thank you. And I'm going to leave with a very swelled head after this. Now.
No, it's okay. You deserve it. You've worked hard. People are happy about your book. I assume you're working on more. Yeah, of course.
Yes, I am in the edit. Yeah, in edits of book two at the moment.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I would have to say also for the writers who are not published out there, like that, I think you work just as hard when you're not published as
that's
you do.
Right.
When you...
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, I think that this idea of, you know, when are you a writer? You know, I think I remember. I mean, honestly, I think I was hungrier before publication as well. And I was trying to get every possible book I had in me down because I thought, what if it's going to be the thing that becomes what I do, or one of the things that makes career happen.
You've had a lot of advice bottled up in you that now that you've met the English speakers in the world, you're become a font of wisdom. Kristen, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thank you. It's been wonderful talking. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome.
It's okay. Sometimes the most common answers are the best one. Perseverance. Persistence. Yeah, you need it. You need it no matter what you do. That is true. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening. Listen, persist, persist. And I'll tell you, it's easier to persist and to persevere when you're doing something you love. Yes, it is. It becomes its own reward. So, as always, until next time, go find something you love to do and do it.